Well, it's sort of another edition of the Falls Cast, brought to you by the Falls Free Press here in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio. Beautiful Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio, in fact, especially at this time of year in the fall. This, I think, is going to be a bonus standalone episode because we were not able to have an interview on our last episode. But as you know, if you've been listening to the show, we are trying really hard to get with all the council candidates that we can to do interviews and let them talk to us and thereby talk to you, the listener, assuming there are some of you out there, which we hope there are, and we know there are. We are really lucky to have with us the next in order of our ward council persons, and been on council now for, I think, 3, maybe 4 terms. It is Mary Nichols Rhodes. Mary, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for having me. This is going to be fun, Alex.
So was I right about that? You're 3 or 4 terms in?
Yes, I won in 15, so 15, 17, 19, so this will be my 4th a 2-year term. So I'm completing my 6th year.
Okay, cool. You have a little bit of there was some hiccups along the way, right? Like you were appointed and then ran to keep it and then lost to the guy that used to call himself Toshiba Bob, and then you won the next time around. Am I right about that?
You are absolutely right. In fact, in 2011, I ran for school board and lost. It was a big field of candidates. I came in 3rd there were either 5 or 6 of us, but there were just two positions. So that was my first foray into the election process. And then, yes, I was appointed as Ward 4 council person in 2013. In like August of 13. And I lost that election in November, and it's heartbreaking. And all you can do is think about what you should have done more, you should have done or whatever, but you have to let that go. And obviously I did. So then I, with a better frame of mind and a lot of motivation, I ran again. And ran against the same person who had beat me in 13, and then I won in 15.
And in fact, mine was one of the doors you knocked on, and I was I think I was holding a newborn baby when you knocked on the door. And
yeah.
I love to start these conversations just by getting a sense of your history, with Cuyahoga Falls. Have you been here all along? You know, how did you get started in the city? How'd you end up here? All that kind of stuff. Where'd you come from? All of that. So would you mind giving us the short version, the long version, whatever you feel like?
All right. The older I get, the longer it gets. I did grow up in Cuyahoga Falls. My family moved here when I was 7. And in fact, I'm back in the house that I grew up in when my parents moved to Stowe like 20 years ago. I was in Cuyahoga Falls, but on the east side. And when they moved to Stowe, I bought their house. So I'm back in the house. So the great advantage to that is not just knowing the neighbors, but that some of the older residents around me who I went to school with their kids. One woman calls me a youngster, which is very appreciated. but I'm back where, I grew up, and I really love the city. I'll start off with, I raised my kids here. I have 2 adult children who are both still in Cuyahoga Falls. They went to Falls High. I went to Falls High. I got divorced a long, long time ago. The kids were small, so I was a single mom for most of their childhoods. And I worked as a nurse. I became an LPN a long time ago and worked in long-term care. But then as the years went by, got into some management positions, and then in 2016, I went back to college, finished my 4-year degree, got a bachelor's in communications, and then went on to get my master's. And that was in 2019. So I really am a lifelong learner. And have just come to a point in my life now that the kids are grown that I can concentrate on making my way forward in the ways that I think I can do the best and make the biggest difference. And so I'm still in long-term care. And but then as far as political life, when the kids were old enough for me to leave for a couple of hours when they were in their early teens, I started to get involved with some issue politics, joined the Dem Club, got involved, got to know a lot of people and how things worked. And truthfully, I thought, not that, I mean, some people do a better job than others in these positions, but I thought there's always going to be a person in these positions, and why not me? Why not my voice, voice of a single mom at the time, and being able to bring my own ideas to the table and have representation that maybe hadn't been represented before. So I was very fortunate. I was part of different school committees, and then I was always involved in PTA. And then I was appointed to the Board of Zoning Appeals, and then I served on the Planning Commission. I was on the Charter Review Commission. And so, the bug had bit me, and I knew I wanted to run for city council. So, or first for the school board and then for city council. And I haven't looked back. It's been wonderful. I love being part of the legislative branch of our city, and being part of a city that's just so positive, and we've got great things ahead of us, and we've come so far in such a short period of time. I'm just very proud of everybody who lives here, everybody that's part of it. We have a very active community, and so it just makes it all the more a big pleasure to work with a lot of people.
Yeah, let's come back to some of that. You know what? I'd love to hear about what it was like for you to join council when you first did. I know you said you ran for school board, and of course you were appointed, and then it sounds like within really just a couple of months, we're off the council and then back on 2 years later. Tell us what you were surprised by when you, got on council that first time and really started to kind of sink your teeth into it.
Well, when I first came, and it was as you say, so it was, well, in August there's a break. Every August there are no council meetings, so I actually didn't have my first meeting until September of that election year. Surprise might not be the word, but well, I guess I have been to some council meetings to know, but they're rather formal. Our council meetings are not, I've been part of issue politics for a long time in different organizations. And, normally at a meeting, all the people sit kind of in a circle or a way you can each see one another and you can jump in, and people are, they do take turns talking, but it's, a lot more interaction. And the council meetings are pretty regimented. You ask permission as a member of a committee, you ask permission of the chair to speak to whomever it is that you want to speak to or ask a question of. And so I guess I was kind of surprised by that. And when I was first on, we were in a row of desk just straight across. So it was almost like if everyone hadn't spoken, you wouldn't even know you had been in a room in a meeting with other people. We did eventually move the desk to be in a horseshoe, so at least you could look at people. There's there's a whole lot of non-communication that goes on in any meeting, and I think that was helpful when we did that. But I guess what I was surprised at then too, we had a different mayor at that time, and it didn't feel like everyone had an equal people weren't listened to necessarily like they are now. So it didn't feel like people had as much of a voice as they do now, back at in 13. But that was, it's funny when I look back at that, it's not very, it didn't have such an impact as it did then when I won again. I guess I was, you know, I was just so new to it and observing and trying to figure it all out. But then when I won and then began to serve in 16, I was just felt like part of the team of people, and the other council people do help, you know, they give you a little advice, of what to do or what to say, or, maybe what not to say or how it's all going to go.
Yeah. So, did you have any sense of Robert's rules going into it?
Yeah, I guess a little bit, but not, usually I think the meetings I had been to, Robert's rules really only came into play when there was a problem. Then people would say, well, wait a minute, let's figure out how we're supposed to do this. But our meetings really are, but you know what? It's a good thing, that we're structured that way, because we don't have the kind of, outbursts and problems that I know other councils even have. Everyone is polite and respectful, and we give our opinion, and it's not like anybody's, it's not a tension kind of filled kind of a meeting. Our meetings are polite and respectful, which in this time is pretty helpful.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, one of the things I've noticed being at council meetings just is that, you know, even if there is some kind of an issue, or like, you know, a procedural thing that like people aren't necessarily sure about, you know, in the Russ Balthus days when he was law director, you had him there to kind of, you know, make sure you were doing things right. And now, of course, Janet Ciottola, who is the first woman ever to be the law director of the city. And there really is just a pretty powerful presence of women in politics in Cuyahoga Falls. And I feel like you're one of the early members of that cohort. I mean, there were others, right? Even on the other side, Carol Klinger, Mary Ellen Pike. What does it mean to you to be, you know, a woman in Cuyahoga Falls politics?
Thank you for bringing that up. I completely agree. Well, it's kind of sad, isn't it, that I'm one of a few in, you know, this day and age. However, we do have four women on council right now, which I think there had been at one point in time four women on council, but it wasn't for very long. Back when it was Kathy Hummel, Diana Colavecchio, Mary Ellen Pike, and Carol Klinger. They all served at the same time at some point in time. But then there were three, and then maybe only two. So I just think it's kind of crazy that you look at 11, there are 11 members, and that we're, you know, excited that there are four women. It certainly should be half at least. I do the career night at Cuyahoga Falls High School. Well, there wasn't one last year, but and part of it, some of the things that they asked you to do would be to have like a question for the students to ask them, or so I was asking them. I would say there are 11 members of city council. How many do you think are women? And I did have a young girl say all of them, and I wanted to hug her. But I just use that as, you know, to point out that, yes, you would think it should be six or five or more, but that at that time it was only three. And that was my foray into saying, and we need women in politics, and please consider it as you grow up, that you should be involved, because we need women's voices. We have a whole different perspective on so many things, I think, and it's just a very important thing to have our voices heard.
Absolutely. Well, I'm glad we brought that up. And I just want to say, too, that I've been trying to get Kathy Hummel to come talk to me for a while, and she's turned me down every time, and I've done it through her family members, one of whom we know, you and I both know pretty well, And if she's listening, I'll just reiterate that I'm ready for her to try again, because we would love to have somebody who's got that kind of knowledge going back as far as she does on the show. But, you know, she's one of the OGs, as the kids would say. So
she is. I'll tell you what, she's still sharp as can be. And I used to love to talk to her, because I helped her on some of her campaigns. And, you know, she ran for mayor once as well.
Oh, and, I did not know that. I did not know that.
Yeah, she did. And she, here was one of the first things I knew about Kathy Hummel. When the schools, Cuyahoga Falls Schools, decided to close Newberry, and there was a big school board meeting in the auditorium, and Kathy Hummel was one of the people who got in line to speak. And when she got up there, she looked at them and she shook her finger and she said, "Shame on you." Because when she and her family moved to Cuyahoga Falls, Bodie had been closed for some reason or another. And they just moved into the neighborhood to have a neighborhood school for the kids to walk to. And then the school was closed. So having that experience, and now here it was again happening, she was not happy. And they actually, I'm sorry, when I think back to part of that was, I don't know if you recall, but there was a time when there wasn't money missing, but there were problems with where the money was being shown in different accounts at different times. Money was being shuffled on paper, and the schools had a huge deficit. And, you know, it caused all kinds of problems, obviously. And so I really have always enjoyed that Kathy Hummel is direct and reasonable and pretty no nonsense. So I hope she comes on. Boy, if you're listening, Kathy, please come on.
She's one of the people who could really give us a lot of historical context, you know, regarding politics in the city of Cuyahoga Falls. So I've asked, I won't pester her, but I would love it if she would come on. So if somebody from the Hummel family or Kathy herself are listening now, please come on. It'd be great, but I'll leave it at that. Mary, I would love to talk about some council related things. And one of the things I like to ask is, obviously there are things that come before the council, that can be seen as controversial by the community for one reason or another. I think sometimes for members of council, they're a little more black and white. Maybe that's not the right metaphor, but a little more cut and dry, let's say, you know, than they appear to be for the community. For instance, and maybe this is one of the examples you'll bring up, there could be a zoning thing where somebody wants to do something that they're well within their rights to do based on zoning, but the community doesn't want it, and it comes before council, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It becomes controversial. I'm curious, what are some of the things that you can sort of give perspective on as far as your role as a city council member, and how, where you stood on some of those more controversial issues that came before council in the 6 years you've been there?
You're right that zoning is usually the one. And the thing about zoning is it is cut and dried, in that if someone is a private property owner and they want to build something or put something there that it's properly zoned for, legally, we have to allow it. Now, we do kind of put them through a lot of paces to go to the Planning Commission to kind of come up with things to make sure it's done in the best way possible. And so we have a little bit of, there's a little wiggle room to make it be better, but we can't just turn it down. And the reason is the city would be sued. It would be absolutely a viable lawsuit if, and just as the mayor has said this before, like, I'm allowed to put a garage up on my property. That's a permissible thing in a residential zoned area. And if the city would just say, well, your neighbors don't want you to put up a garage, so you can't, I mean, that's not okay. So we do have to look at it from a legal point of view. And when I looked at different things, if things were zoned properly, I would vote for them. But of course, I would try to bring up, you know, whether it was screening, you know, to put up trees to make sure that the lights and the noise of whatever it was wasn't going to bother the current people nearby. But if it's a zoning thing, I have voted against a zoning change before that have gone through because others have voted for it. But that's really the time that we do have the power to change something or not allow it to change is the zoning. But you have to be careful with that as well, because if so let's say I own a place where I can put up a multi-family unit building, and now the city comes along and changes the zoning, and now I can't do that. So I could sue saying, well, you've taken away my ability to make money doing that. And so, you know, that's not fair either. So it is a tricky thing. I also look at it from a monetary point of view for my residents, because most of these building things are happening like in Ward 5 or Ward 8. So you think, well, how does that affect Ward 4? You know, why should you care? Well, you do care because, you know, all part of a big community. We want everyone to be treated fairly. But if there's a lawsuit, why should I put my residents' tax dollars into play to have to fight a lawsuit when I know full well that I should have done the legal thing and approved it if it was a properly zoned item? But what we have done proactively, Alex, is to take a look at the zoning and try to be proactive so that something doesn't come up later. And that's the whole purpose, really, of the Merriman Valley Schumacher joint venture between Cuyahoga Falls and Akron. So if, again, we can't change zoning so that people aren't allowed to do something that they should be allowed to do on their property. But like we have, they're called riparian rules related to bodies of water, rivers, or streams. Cuyahoga Falls does have very comprehensive rules related to that. So it depends on the size of the body of water, and people can't build too close. They can't build certain things because you don't want any, you know, particular runoff to go into the watershed. And so we already have those kind of rules, but Akron does not. So when we're talking about Merriman Valley and we're talking about the river down there, if things could be changed to have some rules that would apply to not say you can't build something, but if you do, it has to be this far back. It has to follow whatever kind of sustainability friendly rules that we could have. And that's being proactive, because you don't want the project to come and you can't turn it down and you can't make all those extra rules. So this is a great project, I think, so that we can have things in place ahead of time, just knowing certain kinds of things could come and they would have to follow rules that would make it a lot better. Cuyahoga Falls also, COVID has really messed up my time, but I'm going to say a year and a half ago, we are being very proactive with zoning as far as stormwater. And Cuyahoga Falls has, I'll call it strict, but I would say best regulations related to stormwater and building. And it's not great that everybody doesn't have it, because if we have it and right next to us doesn't have it, you know, that could, their things could still cause problems. But I hope that we're an influence in the region to start doing this kind of thing. And we have a very we have an administration who listens to what we think about these things, and knowing that the future holds regarding climate, and that we need to be proactive. And they're on top of it, and they're on board with it. So that's super helpful.
I want to talk about the initiatives that you're interested in as far as, you know, greening the city. But I do want to drill down just a little bit on this question of some of the controversies that have come about. I mean, obviously, Sycamore is one. And I think you were kind of alluding to it in your response there, you know, where zoning, they were asking for it to be changed. But there have been others where they weren't asking for zoning to be changed. They just wanted to do something. And like you say, you were putting them through their paces. I know the folks in the Cedar Hill neighborhood, you know, generally tend to vote Democratic. I think that if you were to look at the election results, you would see, you know, that that precinct does tend to vote for Democrats. But they were pretty upset when they found out that there was going to be a car wash coming in on the property behind that neighborhood across from the Ernest Angley Church. And some of the criticism at that time when this was all sort of being considered was that, you know, a lot of people were saying, and like you said, and I think rightly, but I, maybe just a little devil's advocacy here, that if we, the defense at the time was we can't tell them what they can't do if they're within, you know, the legal, you know, confines of what they can do, which is to say, you know, they were allowed to use that piece of land to build a car wash. There's nothing saying that they couldn't. And if the council was to tell them that they couldn't, then the council would likely be sued. And then, you know, any precautionary measures that the business might have taken to, you know, reduce runoff, you know, help with lighting and noise and all those kinds of things, they might then say, well, we're not going to do it now. Some people said during that time that we should call their bluff and tell them they can't build it and see if they actually do sue us. And if they don't, then we're not spending the money on a lawsuit and we don't have another car wash up there. Do you care to give me your thoughts on that? Because I'm just curious.
Yeah, I mean, that's how my heart goes. That's the kind of way I think. But I, as a council person, it is my, I mean, I pledge an oath to uphold the law. And if the law says that the zoning, because our zoning things are very specific, like if it's MU4, it'll give you a list of what can be there, if it's, you know, all the different zoning, and car wash is in the list of possibilities for that particular area. So it truly, the best we could do was to, you know, about the lighting, they have restrictions on when they can be open, amount of hours of operation, which is, you know, pretty intrusive if you're a business, I suppose. But so we worked around it as best we could, but we could not say no to a car wash on that lot. It's not legal to refuse it. So now if it had been a zoning change, we could have voted no on the zoning change, but that was not the case.
Right. Okay. Yeah. And we had your colleague, Councilman Russ Balthus, at large councilman, on the show around that time to kind of lead us through all that. But there were some people even after that who still said, you know, call their bluff. That was the term I kept, the way people kept saying it. So I was just curious. Okay. So let us then turn to your passion, which I know is being eco-aware in the way that we do business and the way that we, you know, institute, you know, infrastructure within our city. So what have you been doing? What are you proud of? What do you hope we do, you know, in what could be your fourth term?
I'm very excited about all things climate sustainability. And it's fortunate now that things that we're going to be doing are more cost effective as well. So to this point, up to now, we have replaced all 6,000 streetlights with LED bulbs, which will save a tremendous amount of energy and money. We have, I think it's 7 hybrid police cars now, which will save $9,000 a year in fuel at least. And well, it was just one officer I spoke to, and I asked him how he liked driving it, and he didn't notice the difference, except it was different to turn the car on, and he had to ask somebody how to turn the car on.
But that officer, you know, shall remain nameless.
The show. Oh, absolutely, absolutely, yeah. And it's not like a hybrid has a weird way to. I drive a Prius, and it's a Toyota, and my other people have Toyotas and push starts, and so it's not like it's some weird thing. We are. This is very exciting to me. We put out an RFP, a request for proposal, to put up to 2 megawatts of solar on city grounds, whether and we got 4 proposals back, and we're working with an engineering company called Go Sustainable to kind of take us through the technical parts of what we should be looking at for the proposals. So I'm just very hopeful that we will build some kind of solar on our on city property. My goal, what I would like is for us to commit to 100% sustainable energy. However, it's not as simple as that. We're part of AMP. We do own our own electric, which is wonderful. A public utility is the best kind of utility. There's no profit involved there. And we it's almost like a portfolio, the way that we get our energy. So we might have, let's say we have 8 sources of where we get energy from, and we need a certain amount of energy every day, and so we get this much from this power project, and this from another, and this from another, and they each have end dates to what our contracts are with them. And our next contract time that we're gonna be finished with one particular energy source, the next time is 2026, and then after that, 2028, and there's going to be a large chunk at that time. So my hope is that we will select to replace those a sustainable form of energy. We do already have about 35% of our energy coming from sustainable projects. Like we own one wind turbine, kind of. There's 4 turbines, and we own 25% of the power from that project. So we could say we own one of them. We have a lot of, there's a hydroelectric plant that we get a lot of our energy from, and then there's some solar, and then AMP, which is our, it's almost like a co-op. We're part of AMP, and they're looking to sell energy from a large solar project that they have, and so I'm hoping that we will get energy from them as well. It's a complicated thing, the way we get our energy. So we can't just, like I said, I would love to say 100% renewable, but that's just not possible. So all we can do is, as we go forward, hopefully replace anything that's fossil fuel, replace it with sustainable as we go. But okay, so that's one part of it. But the other part of it is that we need to save energy. We need to be, getting our homes more energy efficient, and we need to, which will save us all money. And one way that got paused because of COVID is we did pass 2 pieces of legislation for PACE loans, some for commercial and also for residential. And PACE loans are property assessed clean energy loans. And the way it would work, it would go through Summit County. So let's say I wanted to put solar on my house, and I needed new windows because they were in bad shape, and maybe I even needed insulation or anything that's energy saving. So I could purchase those things, contract through a company to get them, and I wouldn't have to come up with the cash. The bill for it would go on to my property taxes, and then I could pay it off in whatever period of time. There would be variable but low rates of interest being charged, and go through a Toledo Port Authority. So beyond that, I don't know details. But COVID, there's been a pause on it. Commercial buildings can still do it right now through a NOPEC PACE loan. So I see the block that will not be forever, but the block that I see at this point for people putting solar on is that, financing they've got to come up with, and they could use their line of credit on their house. But I just really would like the PACE loans to be in place for us to offer that. But before COVID, I was working with Solar United Neighbors. They are a nonprofit organization in Northeast Ohio. Well, they're in many places, but they've done a lot of work in Northeast Ohio. And they put together solar co-ops. And so they would have like just a big meeting for anybody who's interested in learning about solar. And then the next meeting might be more details for people who truly are still interested. And then once they get the group of people who are committing to have solar installed, they will find out from that group what the priorities are. Do they want, is it that they want them to be union workers who install? Is price the main priority for them? Is it warranty? Do they want it to be local labor who puts it on? And so the co-op themselves make those choices, and then Solar United goes out and shops their little package of, let's say, 30 houses that want solar, and then they come back and give them those choices. They say, this installer, this is what's good and bad about this one, and then the co-op people choose who they want, and then it goes forward from there, and then Solar United gets out of it at that point. But I think it's such a great program because, you know, each of us individually, how expert are we about what kind of panels, and is my roof solid enough, and, you know, all those things. So the co-op idea to me makes a lot of sense because you've got experts working on your behalf and together. And then because you have a large amount being purchased, hopefully you're going to get a on your installation and on the material. So that was put on hold as well, but I do see that coming. I will be resuming work on that. I'm on the Green Initiatives Committee, which that was stalled during COVID as well. But at our last meeting, we talked about NOPEC. We have a NOPEC grant that we can use for certain kind of power things. And the group decided to use, we're going to get these charger umbrella station kind of things at Paddle Park. I don't know if you've heard about Paddle Park, Alex, but yeah. So we're going to get a couple of those like umbrella tables, and people could, I mean, you could work there because we have Wi-Fi downtown. And if we have enough money, talking about putting a couple down by where the splash pads are, I mean, not near the water, obviously, but there's really no shade down there. So it'd be nice to have a couple tables down there. And then with the next chunk of money from NOPEC, because it's an annual thing, we're looking at more electric vehicle charging places. We do have one at the BD building in that parking lot. That's our first. It's not operational yet.
The which building?
The Summit DD down there. Okay, yeah. Downtown, like right across from Oakwood.
And there's a couple at the Sheridan, I think. I don't think they're for public use. You probably have to be staying there, but there are some there too, I think.
Yeah. Yes. But like, this is the first public one in Cuyahoga Falls, because I think they have them at Walmart, I've been told. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they do have them at the Sheraton. There will be a charge, and I kind of objected to that because I thought it would be nice to incentivize people having electric cars. But it has, I don't know, I guess there was a big discussion about it, and people who are very in the know said that that's the best practice, is to charge for it. And so, but it's still cheaper than gas, like no matter what. So those are some of the things. Let me think what else. I spoke with our finance director recently too, because we're going into budget times for council. And I was wanting to know, in what departments could I be the biggest influence for things that they might purchase or do. Mostly it's going to be automobiles, I think. And so I'm waiting to find out, excuse me, if we're planning to purchase any vehicles for any of the departments this year. And then, so maybe like last year, we'll have some hybrids that we're going to buy. But there's different ways. What I really want to do, though, is for our city to come up with a very comprehensive, sustainable plan, so that when something comes up in 3 years and something's going to be replaced, a building or whatever, that it's looked at with the lens of a of sustainability, so that something doesn't get built and then they go, oh, we could have done this or should have done that, so that it's always that we're always being proactive in that way. So but people are very, the city people are all on board and responsive, and I see good things happening in the future for sure.
That's true. Yeah, I think that that is a very comprehensive overview of all the ways in which the city is seeking to be more green. I know you love your Prius, but I also know that you're hoping to get a Tesla. How soon before you get that Tesla?
Well, Alex, the truth is I'm waiting for a 2012 Model S to be $20,000, and it isn't happening yet.
So you do have a plan is what you're saying.
That's my plan. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I would love to have a Prius, or I'm sorry. I would love to have a Tesla. I still, you know, every day when I see them, I'm depressed if I don't see like at least a handful of them. I say it out loud. So I'm like, ooh, Tesla. You know, I was the first, well, I guess only probably, person in the Memorial Day parades to have hybrids and electric cars. You know, usually people, it's older cars that people bring, or muscle cars and stuff. But I have had Ford. Oh, I'm going to go blank. What is the Ford hybrid? Oh, C-Max. Sorry. I've had two C-Maxes. I borrowed one from Spitzer. It was a Fusion that's a hybrid, and I've had two Teslas, and I got to drive the one that was a Model X, and it's just a great car. So yeah, that's the dream. I'm not giving up. I'll get one someday.
Okay, well, so we've talked about quite a bit of stuff. Usually I would want to ask about, you know, stuff that you're proud of on council, stuff that was challenging. But as we're already 45 minutes into the interview, I'm thinking maybe we start to wind down here. And the best way to wind down is to ask you the really, really hard question, the gotcha question, the question that's really going to throw you for a loop. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. What is the best restaurant in Cuyahoga Falls?
Oh, see. Here I am, a politician, like, going to say, can I rearrange your question? The best restaurant? I could tell you the best meal at each restaurant.
Well, I know you love Eddie's Deli because it's in Ward 4.
I do.
But so we can talk about how much you love Eddie's. That's fine. But you're going to have to pick. Some people just end up telling me like four or five restaurants that they love, and that's okay too.
Okay, well, I definitely have those. And I'm so lucky that if I even were just choosing in Ward 4, how many restaurants there are to choose from. I mean, there's El Maison, and there's Dairy Queen, and then there's all the downtown. But so I do love El Maison, and I love Eddie's omelets. That's the best, I think. I love Fleury's for breakfast, and I love Burntwood. I would say, like, for lunch or dinner, Burntwood is my favorite. I guess that's, I love Shawarma Brothers. I love Shawarma. So I'm a good eater, and I have a lot of favorite restaurants.
I think Flurries and Shawarma are solid choices. I'm going to ding you on Dairy Queen just because it's a chain. But your friend Diana Colavecchio told us that, you know, she goes to Burger King for coffee. So, you still have an edge on her. Although we love Diana, we do. We just need to get her some good coffee. So,
yeah, really. I went and bought her some Diana's coffee. Have you ever had that from Pearl Coffee in Akron?
No,
it's very good coffee. Yes, just very. Some restaurants serve it. I'm not sure if any in Cuyahoga Falls, but it's real good. So, yeah, she needs to change that morning coffee. I mentioned Dairy Queen because I'm very, you know, Dairy Queen is a bit iconic. You know, we all have memories of Dairy Queen, especially as kids. Like when I was in high school at Falls High, we had open lunch and you could literally run over and get some fries and eat them hurriedly while you ran back. But, you know, we're getting the new Dairy Queen, and that's very exciting. And, you know, 7th and Portage is a happening place with El Maison and Drug Mart's been redone, and We got the new Dairy Queen.
I will say Dairy Queen, that particular Dairy Queen, I don't know if this is true of all Dairy Queens, but that particular location is extremely involved in the community. They've been a friend of the Cuyahoga Falls City School District. They really do participate in the community in a way that a chain restaurant really doesn't have to. So maybe I'll give you a little bit of that credit back for that one.
No, I agree. Remember, at the end of the school year, the PTA was trying to give every graduating student a $25 gift card, and they fell short on the fundraising, and Dairy Queen made up the difference so that it could happen.
Oh, wow. I didn't even know that. I bought one of them, yeah. But I didn't know that.
Yep.
Well, so you learn something new every day, every night at 9:48 p.m. in October. It was quite a something getting the planets to align so that we could have this chat tonight. So I want to thank you very much for coming on the Falls Cast.
I thank you, Alex. Mm-hmm.
We know you're running for re-election. Tell us why folks should vote for you and where they can find out more.
I do have a Facebook page, but I actually, even though I'm running, I'm kind of doing the same kind of posts, of events and things like that. But anybody can email me or what was the first part you asked me? You asked me how they could get why they should vote for me. That's a good thing for me to remember that you asked me. So I'm going to tell you that I truly, truly care about the people in this community, and I take it so seriously that my job is to make sure that I fully represent the people in my work. I work real hard. I am always at bat for people who live here, and so many of the things that come up for me to help people through, it's just a matter of helping facilitate them get to the right person and ask the right questions, and there's a lot of reward in that because, there are people just like, sometimes people don't have a problem their whole life. And then there's some crazy situation that comes up and it's scary. And I like to be able to help people through that. But I also am obviously enthusiastic about sustainable energy and moving our city in the right direction so that we can have a planet to live on. It's our part. It's our responsibility. Our city, even though we're not the biggest city in the world, but it's all of our responsibility to be part of the solution. And I believe that with all my heart. And so I need to stay on council so that I can be that voice. And then I do have a lot of experience on council, but also on the different commissions and stuff. And it's very helpful to understand how things work. And so I think I make the best use of that. And that's it. I'm just really committed to democracy and to making things good for all the people who live here. So that's why people should vote for me.
All right. Well, you heard it here, Ward 4 residents and Cuyahoga Falls residents. Mary Nichols Rhodes is running for re-election. We thank you so much, Councilwoman, for coming on the show. And we hope that you'll come back and talk with us again.
Thank you very much, Alex. It's been a pleasure.
FallsCast is a production of the Falls Free Press in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio. Please check out the Falls Free Press at fallsfreepress.com or on social media at facebook.com/fallsfreepress or @falls_free on Twitter or Instagram. We thank you for listening to this episode, which was recorded and edited by Alex Hall. Please subscribe to our podcast and tell your Cuyahoga Falls friends and family so that they can listen as well.